In the grandeur of the court of the Sun King, Louis XIV, a scandalous affair of intrigue and sorcery distills into a potent potion for love or even death. Join us as we delve into the world of magical elixirs and the enigmatic figure at its center, Catherine Monvoisin, known throughout history as La Voisin.
Welcome to As We Eat, where we explore the intersection of food, family, history, and culture.
We think there's something magical that happens when people get together and share food. Conversations seem to happen a little more naturally. We talk about our commonalities and our differences. We share stories, memories, and recipes.
And we'll use food to take a journey that explores our human experience. Share some fun facts and some that aren't so fun. Talk about food history and how food connects and defines us.
So if you've ever eaten, prepared, or shared food, then this podcast probably has something for you.
Hi, Leigh.
Hey, Kim. Now, before we get started, I just want to congratulate you on your, as you call it, career bling. That's very exciting. Very proud of you.
Thank you. For those playing along at home, I recently received a promotion in my day job, which has been very exciting. I'm very pleased with it. It's been tempered by a little bit of sad news, as I revealed in our last journal article for February on love, loss, and trail mix, that my father-in-law passed away. So we've been dealing with a lot of good news and a lot of sad news, but we persevere. The show must go on, as they say. How are you doing, Leigh?
I'm good. Man, it is absolutely stunning here today. It's actually been stunning for the past week. It has just been fabulous.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah. We're probably in faux spring, as it were, for the Pacific Northwest, where any day now, it, you know, could dump buckets of snow on us. But I do have my lone daffodil in my front yard has bloomed. So I'm taking that as a harbinger of brighter days ahead. So it's sunny and bright here, but it's cold because we have no cloud layer to keep us warm.
Yeah, that is the one thing. Yeah. When it gets beautiful here, it gets cold too because of that nice blanket of clouds that keeps you warm.
Yeah, it's like cozy, like a little planet blanket, you know.
Exactly.
Big fluffy cloud comforter. But I'm ready for more of the light and the sunshine and brighter days ahead. And I hope that for all of us. Now, I've asked this question before, but how far would you go to obtain or even to destroy the focus of your affection? From ancient civilizations to the royal courts of Europe, the pursuit of love via potions has left a trail of mystery and intrigue. And today we're peeking behind the curtain at the people working in the shadows of a fascinating tale of love potions and clandestine affairs in 17th century France. And the scandalous events that unfolded in the court of Louis XIV, culminating in the Affair of the Poisons. I'm going to start us off with a brief history of love potions. The concept of love potions, notably a drink or even infused food like an apple, is a recurring theme in our literature, mythology, and popular culture. From Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream to fairy tales like Snow White and Sleeping Beauty, the concept of a bespelled food that could inspire love and passion have played a central role in storytelling, with results ranging from comedic to tragic. And truth is often stranger than fiction, and actual history of love potions spans cultures and civilizations dating back thousands of years. Love potions, what we might also call aphrodisiacs, have been sought after throughout history as a means to inspire desire, passion, and romantic attraction. The use of love potions can be traced back to ancient civilizations such as Egypt, Mesopotamia, Greece, and Rome. In these cultures, various herbs, spices, and other natural substances were believed to possess aphrodisiac properties and were used to concoct potions and elixirs to stimulate desire and enhance fertility. For example, in ancient Egypt, potions made from ingredients like honey, figs, and spices were believed to compel someone to fall in love with you. Cleopatra was rumored to have won the affections of Mark Antony by bathing in milk. In ancient Greece and Rome, the concept of love potions was deeply ingrained in mythology and literature as well. The Greek goddess Aphrodite, often associated with love and beauty, was depicted with magical potions and charms that inspired desire and romantic longing. And in Roman mythology, her son Cupid, the god of love, was said to wield magical arrows that could induce love and passion in their targets. Love potions are also prevalent in folklore and folk medicine traditions across Europe and other regions. Folk healers concocted potions and charms using a variety of ingredients, including herbs, animal parts, and minerals, believed to possess aphrodisiac properties. These potions are often used for romantic purposes or to enhance fertility and marital harmony. In modern times, the idea of love potions persists in various forms, although often with a more skeptical or humorous approach. But who can forget the 1950 song Love Potion Number 9 with its effectively comedic results? And even today, you can order pheromone-enhanced fragrances guaranteed to attract the opposite sex. It seems that we'll do virtually anything for love. Our scene today is set in 17th century Europe. Although this period marks a time of great interest in art, music, and aesthetic beauty, it also bears the weight of changing thoughts and opinions about the forces of heavenly good and demonic evil. So while herb remedies and potions are often prescribed by medieval physicians and apothecaries to treat various ailments, including impotence and infertility, the church viewed such potions and remedies with suspicion, condemning them as witchcraft and associating them with the devil. I want to take a closer look at what actually constitutes an herbal remedy or potion. Reflecting the limited understanding of toxicity and pharmacology during the 17th century, there were numerous substances used in remedies that were considered medicinal, but we now know to be poisonous or harmful. Mercury was widely used in various forms due to its perceived antibacterial and antifungal properties. It was applied topically to treat skin conditions and wounds, and was also ingested as a treatment for syphilis and other ailments. In truth, mercury is highly toxic and can cause severe neurological damage, kidney failure, and other serious health problems. Lead compounds were commonly used in medications and cosmetics. Lead acetate, known as sugar of lead, was used in various preparations, including as a sweetener and a treatment for various ailments. However, lead is a potent neurotoxin that can cause cognitive impairment, developmental delays, and other health issues, especially in children. Arsenic was another toxic substance believed to have medicinal properties and used to treat a range of conditions, including skin disorders, fevers, and even as a supposed aphrodisiac due to its ability to induce a sense of warmth and a tingling sensation upon ingestion. Now, this sensation was probably a result of arsenic's poisonous effects on the nervous system rather than any actual aphrodisiac properties. Arsenic is highly poisonous, causes nausea, vomiting, abdominal pain, and in severe cases, death. Let's not forget the case of poor Marie Lafarge, who was suspected of poisoning her husband with arsenic. Belladonna, also known as deadly nightshade, was used in herbal medicine for its purported sedative and pain-relieving properties. It was ingested or applied topically to alleviate various symptoms, including muscle spasms, asthma, and menstrual cramps. However, belladonna contains toxic alkaloids that can cause hallucinations, delirium, and respiratory paralysis. Henbane was another plant used in traditional medicine during the 17th century, particularly as a sedative and pain reliever. However, henbane contains tropane alkaloids, including scopolamine, which can cause hallucinations, confusion, and toxic delirium. It's unlikely that any of these aforementioned ingredients would be dispensed full strength, but rather mixed with other ingredients crushed with seeds and nuts, been bound in honey as a capsule, or perhaps an elixir or potion mixed with wine. And in the 17th century, the prevailing belief in the doctrine of signatures influenced the perception of food and its medicinal properties. This doctrine suggests that plants and foods resembling certain body parts or exhibiting specific qualities could be used to treat ailments related to those parts or qualities. I remember talking about the ear-shaped dumplings in last year's dumpling episode. Right. That was a remedy against frostbite because they affected right. the ears. So yeah. Food shaped like an ear was good for your ears. As a result, various foods are not only cherished for their flavor, but also valued for their perceived healing properties. Ingredients and the quality of ingredients varied widely, and could include exotic substances such as rare herbs, animal parts, and more sinister components like the poisonous materials we were talking about, but ultimately could create a potion that produced or at least simulated the desired effect, and these would have been highly sought. Those who could provide such a service received riches and notoriety for what they were able to accomplish. Let me take you now into the specific world of the royal court of Louis XIV, known popularly as the Sun King for his charismatic personality and the magnificence and opulence surrounding him. This court was not immune to the craze for love potions that swept through Europe. In an era of extravagance and excess, where passion and power often intersected, the desire to manipulate emotions and relationships led to a certain popularity of love potions among the nobility. At the heart of this craze was a growing disconnect between the tenets of Catholicism in France and a belief in the supernatural and the efficacy of magic to influence human affairs. The taboo elements of fortune-telling, divination, and talismans and potions thought to possess mystical properties were very much in vogue, despite the fact that they were not really meant to be acceptable. In the court of Louis XIV, where courtiers vied for favor and influence, the use of love potions became a clandestine means of gaining advantage in the matters of romance and politics. Sometimes those two were often intertwined. Nobles clandestinely sought out practitioners of the occult, such as fortune tellers, sorcerers, and alchemists, who claimed to possess the knowledge and skills to create potent love potions. But a secret is only as good as it is kept, and it was soon discovered that there was a ring of people providing all manners of potions and magic-y stuff to the court. The affair of the poisons was a scandalous intrigue of witchcraft, sorcery, and poisoning, and at its center was Catherine Montvaucin, known as La Vaucin. The suspicions of a poison conspiracy actually began in 1675 with the trial of Madame de Brinvilliers, who was accused of conspiring with her lover, Army Captain Gaudin de Sainte-Croix, to poison her father in 1666 and two of her elder brothers in 1670 in order to inherit their estates. She briefly fled the country but was arrested and then, frankly, tortured for her confession. For her crimes, she was both beheaded and burned at the stake.
Wow.
And it could have ended there, but the sensational trial drew attention to other mysterious deaths, starting rumors of a poisoning of the elite by the elite.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have talked about this before. You know, of course, if you're well-bred, you certainly wouldn't be doing this poisoning. This was something that was done by the lower classes. So now we see this being pulled up into courts and they're scared.
Oh, yeah. Because people are thinking like, oh, I felt really ill last week. Is somebody out to get me? And when you have this sort of paranoia about your own station paired with a just obsession with getting ahead, you're going to start to look for all those things that are going wrong. And you're going to point to something like a curse or a poison or someone's out to get me. And it becomes a sort of communal belief that things are going wrong and going bad. So, of course, authorities started to look into these rumors and these accusations, and they rounded up scores of fortune tellers and alchemists suspected of selling not only divinations, seances, and aphrodisiacs, but also, quote, inheritance powders, end quote, which we can easily construe as a poison or some kind of matter substance meant to move you closer to your inheritance, your due from your family. And not unlike other eras of witch hunts or inquisitions or red scares, many of those being investigated confessed under torture and duress and ended up giving authorities lists of their clients, some of whom who sought love potions or medicines to end an unwanted pregnancy or to cure a sexual disease or just frankly bought poison to get rid of their spouses or rivals in the royal court. And the most famous figure within this ring was Catherine de Chez Montvaucin, or La Vaucin, who is either a midwife or a poisoner by commission, depending on which version of the story sounds the most intriguing. This is what tends to end up in our newspapers, less of the cold hard truth and more of the, and then she did types of stories. And Catherine was arrested in 1679 after she was incriminated by a rival. In turn, La Vaucin implicated several other important courtiers, including Olympia Mancini, the Countess of Soissons, her sister, Duchess of Bouillon, François-Henri de Montmorency, Duke of Luxembourg, and most importantly, the king's mistress, Madame de Montespan. Now, Madame de Montespan is the official mistress of Louis XIV and rumored to have turned to such practices in her efforts to win and secure the king's affection and to secure her position at court. Madame was alleged to have hired La Vaucin first in 1667 and arranged a black mass during which she prayed to win the love of the king. And for the next 12 years, it was alleged that Madame Montespan turned to La Voisin and her network repeatedly to secure the king's affections, either via magic, potion, or poison. As you can imagine, it was quite the scandal, and sensationalized accounts of the investigation and its results remain as the predominant record. What we do know is that investigations lasted for approximately 3 years. A special tribunal for the trial of the accused, collectively known as the Chambre Ardente, was created in April 1679. It held 210 sessions at the arsenal in Paris, issued 319 writs of arrest, and sentenced 36 people to death. And the exact extent of the poisonings and whether it was actually a conspiracy remains a subject of debate among historians, but this affair of the poisons remains one of the most notorious scandals in French history. So who exactly was Catherine Montvoisin, and how did she get so close to the very heart of one of the most notable monarchies in European history? And Catherine was born in 1640 in France in humble circumstances. Her early life is relatively unknown. She likely lacked formal education, but managed to carve a path for herself, gaining notoriety as a purported sorceress, fortune teller, and herbalist. Supposedly, she learned fortune telling as a child. She later married Antoine Mauvoisin, a jeweler and silk merchant in Paris. When her husband's business failed, she supported her family of six, including her mother, husband, and their children, with palmistry and face reading. Her knowledge of herbs perhaps evolved into providing abortions, as well as the manufacture of love potions and poison commissions. By the late 1660s, Catherine was the wealthy and famous La Voisin with aristocratic clients. At her home in Villeneuve-sur-Gravois, she entertained members of Parisian high society and had several lovers, including a vicomte, an executioner, an alchemist, an architect, and a magician, all different people, and yet was known to regularly attend church. Despite her success, she also did face a lot of personal challenges, including reports of alcoholism and then deep conflicts with rivals. And there's a compelling dichotomy of women like Catherine in that time. They're either the benevolent midwife bringing solace and relief to women whose lives were raw and difficult, especially in pregnancy and childbirth, or they are a malevolent, greedy sort quick to sow destruction in unhappy homes. There's never anything in the middle. They're either all good or they're all evil.
Right.
And indeed, Catherine is part of a larger narrative surrounding paranoia about magical abilities and occult practices. After her arrest, her rival spread rumors that the bones of thousands of children were found buried in her garden, the very place that she entertained Parisian elite. And in reality, the extent of her role in these activities is really difficult to ascertain, as much of the information about her comes from sensationalized accounts and trial records that may have been influenced by political agendas and societal prejudices. During her trials, Catherine denied ever meeting or serving Montespan. She did admit that, quote, "Paris is full of this kind of thing, and there is an infinite number of people engaged in this evil trade," end quote, and counterclaimed any usage of poisons, and that she only possessed purgatives for the personal use or for her family. She refused to mention further clients, nor did she mention having arranged or participated in Black Masses. Her list of clients, whether she arranged Black Masses, and her connection to Montespan were not fully revealed until after her death, when it was stated by her daughter and confirmed by the testimonies of her former associates. Catherine has been immortalized as La Voisin, this archetype of cunning and a mysterious sorceress. From novels to films, her character serves as a potent symbol of mysterious feminine power and defiance against societal constraints. But whatever the actual truth of La Voisin's crimes, we will never really know. Catherine was convicted of witchcraft on February 17, 1680, and sentenced to execution by burning 2 days later. She died at the stake on February 22, 1680. The affair of the poisons ultimately implicated 442 suspects. Of the 367 issued orders of arrest, 218 were carried out, and of the condemned, 36 were executed. 5 were sentenced to galleys and 23 to exile. And this excludes any who died in custody by torture, which was prevalent, or suicide, which was prevalent as well. Once La Voisin's connection with Montespan was fully brought to light by her daughter, Louis XIV actually suspended the investigations and sealed testimonies. Many of the accused were never brought to criminal trial, but placed outside of the justice system via lettre de cachet and imprisoned for life. And this included 37 women and 28 men. As for Madame de Montespan, she was exiled in 1691 after irrevocably falling out of favor. She died in May 1707 at the age of 67, never reconciling with her king and lover. Her children with Louis were forbidden from mourning for her. But the thing that gets me about the story of Catherine is that it's the obsession with love potions in the court that was never really investigated as its cause of this madness. That the pressure of court life brewed up this extent of broad social anxiety about love, power, and control deserves to be really examined. We're going to take a brief sponsor break, and when we return, Lay will take us deeper into the world of wise women and whether they deserve to bear the brunt of these accusations of witchcraft.
Spring is coming, and that means that there will soon be crops of fresh and tender vegetables to perk up our winter palates. If, like me, you find yourself craving some novelty, then Kim and I heartily recommend the delicious artisan oils and vinegars, salts and spices, chocolates and conserves, and gifts at Genesis Kitchen. Genesis Kitchen is committed to helping the foodie community find a wide variety of ethically and sustainably sourced food and pantry items. My favorite is the Barnacle Kelp Chili Crisp, and Kim won't stop talking about Teeny Tiny's organic curry spice blends. And if you're looking to share a little food love with someone special, there are a variety of gift sets that Genesis Kitchen has especially curated to whet the appetite. If you're local to the Flathead Valley, visit them at their Columbia Falls location. If not, they're just a click away at genesis-kitchen.com. This episode is sponsored by Genesis Kitchen. Use the code ASWEEAT25 to enjoy 25% off your first order. Promotion ends April 30th, 2024.
Wow, Kim, that was a fascinating and kind of sordid tale. You know, it is really incredible to think about the lengths people went to in the pursuit of passion and power during this era. Well, any era, really. The affair of the poisons really highlights the obsession with love potions and their link to courtly intrigues at the time. You know, so many of our conversations and discussions on the podcast have centered around this undercurrent about these societal pressures of whatever given period we were talking about. And as you pointed out, this pressure, especially for women like La Voussin and the nobility patronizing her, was immense. So being able to wield some power, even if perceived as illicit or occult, must have given these women a sense of control over their destinies in a very male-dominated and hierarchical-structured society. You know, we've mentioned time and time again the importance that societies have placed on the necessity of a woman doing as they should. You know, becoming a wife. It was virtuous. It was a woman's purpose. Obeying codes of ethics, even when their male counterparts did not. Whatever you think of these beliefs and dictates, they were in many cases the only options available to women to have some sense of security. We talked about Christiana Edmonds in episode 78, The Chocolate Cream Killer, and how her societal standing and ultimate access to marriageable suitors was diminished by her father being institutionalized. An event, an occurrence that she had absolutely no control over. And, you know, something like this had to have a huge emotional impact, as well as carrying financial and social implications on her and her life. Did it push her to the actions that she took? We don't know what would have become of Christiana had the stars aligned a bit differently, but we do know the importance placed on acquiring a proper partner. You know, I talked about the station of women in episode 78 when I talked about Juliana Tafana, and you'll remember that they had very little independence or power over their lives, and they had even fewer ways of earning any kind of income. So the role of these folk healers that you talked about was one of the few avenues that these women had to cultivate expertise for one and income streams at the time. La Voussin's husband's business failed, So she became the breadwinner in this case. And that was, you know, this again, this was one of the ways that she could earn a living. The other one was becoming a sex worker. So I think I would pick the folk healing personally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, it had to be intoxicating and compelling to be someone like La Voussin, the celebrated sorceress who had the ear of the highest members of the royal court, all desperate to bend their fate and their will through her potions. Now, another thing that comes to mind about this love magic, and as you mentioned early on, Kim, was something that we discussed at length in our aphrodisiac episode, which was episode 11, was the transformative aspects of consuming foods. So this actually is a belief that by consuming something, you would take on the characteristics, the power or the essence assigned to the specific food or ingredient. And we see that in the ingredients used by La Voussin. And you did an amazing job of going through the toxicity and some of the characteristics of the ingredients that she used. Iron was thought to protect against evil and attract love. Blood, it was the life of the flesh. And there's a huge overlap here in the blood with Christian beliefs of the sacrament. Remember, this was a very, very, very religious time period. I mean, you had laws in effect that required you to go to church and to confess, at least have one confession during a year. And they gave papers for these confessions so that you could prove that you did this. And so you've got this indoctrination into blood magic, if you will, with the body and blood of Christ. Bones, again, this transferring of the life force of a human. Arsenic, which we do know is poison, but it was, as you pointed out, also considered an aphrodisiac because of the flush that was caused in the face and that tingling effect. And as you also pointed out, we have to remember that these substances that we do now know are very toxic. Well, they did then too, but they were used for medicinal purposes and remedies. And arsenic falls into this category. Lead, as you mentioned, lead acetate has this sweetness, and it was hard to distinguish from sugar. And this isn't the last time that we will be hearing about the sugar of lead, as it was called, as you pointed out. We'll be discussing this in some upcoming episodes. So it wasn't just...
Yes, we will.
Yeah, it wasn't just resigned to this time period. Belladonna.
Yeah.
Also considered an aphrodisiac, and used in small doses, it provided this hallucinogenic effect, likely creating the sense of altering someone's mind to your will. So all of these ingredients made total sense for her to use in a love potion. Beyond these ingredients that she used in her love potions, many of our pantry items were employed as culinary love talismans. Honey is one of the most common. It was prized for its viscous, sensuous texture and perceived medicinal benefits. It was believed to be an aphrodisiac and a fertility booster. And there are stories of lovers like Cupid using honey as a romantic offering. Spices like cinnamon, ginger, nutmeg were seen as stimulating and passionate ingredients that improved circulation and vigor. The warmth and the aroma alone were meant to evoke desire. In a lot of cases, some of these spices were actually outlawed because of this. Eggs, a symbol of fertility, rebirth, and new life, they frequently appeared in so-called fertility potions and rituals around romance and marriage. Apples, as you mentioned, Kim, have been long tied to temptation, seduction, original sin in biblical lore. In Greek mythology, as you mentioned, the golden apple distracted Atalanta from her foot race. So apples held a deep association with forbidden desire. Pomegranates were another fruit heavily linked to concepts of fertility. They had all of the seeds with this multitude of offspring. and they were seen as an offering to goddesses like Persephone.
Oh, yeah.
Now, of course, trying to gain agency through potions and love talisman can be a double-edged sword, as we saw how viciously Lavoisin and so many of the other women were persecuted when the witch hunts began over the affair of the poisons. Still, I can't help but have some sort of admiration for her boldness and her entrepreneurial spirit in that repressive era, even if her means went too far. But did they? As the saying goes, history is written by the victors. Much of what we know of Lavoisin is from the Bastille archives, from prisoners who were being tortured. And I'm sure they were being fed the names of the women they wanted to use as examples. We also know that sensationalization is the best way to work people up into a frenzy, and what better way than to invoke the devil, demons, and black magic into any story. So as shocking as Lavoisin's actions may have been, you can understand the satiation of being able to take control of your life and fortunes, instead of leaving it to chance or the whims of the powers that be. Oh, and let's bring this whole thing back into current times. Teen Vogue has an article entitled Love Spells and the Basics of Love Magic that outlines how to create a spell as well as the origins of love magic and how it does and doesn't work, published in 2023. You can find articles on how to cast the spells to make someone fall in love with you on the internet. There are videos that will walk you through casting love spells. And as you mentioned, Kim, we even have perfumes that boast the ability to attract your perfect mate or increase your sex appeal with the addition of pheromones. So even today, we crave the power and agency over our faiths. In our next episode, we'll be taking you on a slippery slope as we explore crimes against a favorite dairy product.
Thank you for spending some time with us today. We're both excited to bring you some fascinating stories at the intersection of food and crime this season, and how our passions can lead to some pretty scandalous concoctions. For more information about today's episode, check out our website at aswe-eat.com. Follow us on Instagram at aswe-eat, and please join our family recipes, traditions, and food lore community on Facebook.
And so you don't miss an episode, subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And if you could step away from the cauldron and rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcast, Podchaser, or Spotify, we would be ever so appreciative. This really helps us to grow the As We Eat family.
We also published the As We Eat Journal on Substack. We would be honored if you would support us by becoming a subscriber. We take tasty side trips through vintage recipes, community cookbooks, dish discoveries, table talks, and so much more. We are sure you'll find something you love at asweeat.substack.com.
You've been listening to the As We Eat podcast, part of our curiosity-driven project, serving up how food connects, defines, and inspires by blending a bit of research and a dash of humor with a whole lot of passion, though we are careful about the concoctions we brew. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-